listening to the Heritage Film Club podcast show. It's three lads chatting about a movie that one of them forced the others to watch. If you're looking for an in-depth analysis of your favourite movies, boy, have you come to the wrong place. My fancy British accent is as smart as this show will ever sound. These guys barely know what they're talking about. It's time to sit back, relax and enjoy. Welcome to the club. Now here are your hosts, Mike, Brian and Clayton.
Inspired by the imagination of P.T. Barnum, The Greatest Showman is an original musical that celebrates the birth of show business and tells of a visionary who rose from nothing to create a spectacle, the greatest show on earth, that became a worldwide sensation. You're listening to the Heritage Film Club, and this is The Greatest Showman. Welcome, everyone, to another episode. I am Mike, and with me this time, a little bit different, is Clayton, which is the same.
Hello.
And Caroline.
Hello.
Hi. No Brian at the moment. So if you are fans of Brian and that's what you come each week for, then
he's
sorry. All those idle threats have come to fruition. No, he's experiencing a bit of a power outage. So we will tack on a separate little ramble with him at the end of this episode. So Brian fans, just stay tuned through our talk. Cool. All right. So as I said, this week we are talking The Greatest Showman. This was our special guest's pick. And here we go. So some stats. Greatest Showman from 2017, making this, I believe, our most modern movie we've talked about on the show so far. It was directed by Michael Gracey. This was his directorial debut. And it stars, of course, Hugh Jackman, Michelle Williams, Zac Efron, Zendaya, and Rebecca Ferguson, amongst many, many others. This movie had a budget of $84 million, and it went on to gross $435 million.
Damn.
It has an IMDb score of 7.6. For some reason, a Metacritic rating of only 48%, and a Rotten Tomatoes score. Now, I know in your research, Caro, you've already looked this up, but Clayton?
Yeah, man.
Critics or audience?
I'd be an audience movie.
By far. This is also possibly the biggest gap we've had in any of our movies. Critics was 56%, which seems really low. And audience was a whopping 86%.
Do we know why the critics, like, shit on it?
I think we're swearing in this episode.
I don't think shit.
This
was.
Is not Team America, Clayton.
I don't think shit was swearing. Sorry. Do we know why the critics scored it so lowly?
I think one of the reasons the critics don't like it so much is because it's not an accurate portrayal of P.T. Barnum.
Yeah, by any means.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the movie they portray him as someone who celebrates inclusivity, but in real life,
diversity.
But in real life, he more exploits people. So I think they had a huge issue with that.
Hold on, is this a true story?
Loosely based or inspired by the person. Yeah.
P.T. Barnum is a real person. He is the greatest showman. He is the guy who basically invented
circus.
Yeah, what the circus as you know it or used to know it before all the animals got banned. He basically created that.
So it's his bloodline that we need to go after for animal cruelty.
Oh, they've already shut that down. So basically, he and his partner, who is not Zac Efron, but Bailey. So Barnum and Bailey Circuses created what became the modern circus, and as well as another outfit, which is the Ringling Brothers Circus. And they eventually brought out the Barnum and Bailey Circus after P.T. Barnum died, and it became the awkwardly named Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Greatest Show on Earth.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Cool.
But yeah, as Caro said, he was a bit more controversial than the movie might portray him.
Oh, okay.
He's very much a rags-to-riches hero in this movie and, yeah, very much for inclusivity and diversity. However, he rose to fame and became an entertainer from leasing an African-American slave who was blind and mostly paralyzed and exhibiting her around 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, as a 160-year-old woman who used to be the wet nurse for the first president of the United States, George Washington. And that was his first sort of, I don't want to say attraction because that sounds bad.
Exhibit, I guess.
Yeah. Exhibit.
And that was when slavery was banned, but he found a loophole which allowed him to lease her.
Yeah, so this is all just after the Civil War and slavery was abolished. So he got around that by leasing her. And that was his first exhibit. And he took her around and she eventually died while under contract because of the amount of hours she was putting in. So
never saw any of the money either, apparently.
No, and then when she died, P.T. Barnum performed a public autopsy.
No way.
Yeah, which he charged 50 cents a ticket for in 1800s money, and 1,500 people were in the crowd.
What?
Yeah, and so even exploiting, yeah, exactly, exploiting even after death. And the autopsy revealed she was only actually 80 in the end, but the publicity obviously, you know, like for you, Clayton, wrestling promoter Eric Bischoff says, controversy creates cash. So that's what that was.
She was going to have a scene in the movie, actually, but they cut it. I think she got sick, so they cut her scene. But, yeah.
Who got sick?
The actor that was going to play.
Oh, I was
going to
say the lady was dead. Yeah.
Okay. So Joyce Heath was the African-American woman.
Yes.
And that was going to be played by Diane Carroll.
Okay.
But, yeah, she got cut.
I really can't see for the story they have portrayed in this movie. And this movie is great. Like, I really like this movie as a movie and as a fictional story, not as a autobiographical recounting of his life, right? But for the movie they chose to make and the story and themes they chose, I can't see how that would have fit in. And I can't really see Hugh Jackman agreeing to that either.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
But anyway, it is what it is. We've skipped through to our talks already, but I thought Clayton might find that quite interesting.
Yeah, I'm like...
Damn Wolverine.
No. I'm sort of like... No. How do I put it? Like...
Cast the movie in a different light for you now.
I'm not going to give away how I feel about this movie, but I would actually prefer to watch a movie that is that story that you just described to me.
Okay, well, he did write a biography, and there are quite a few books on P.T. Barnum that you can read.
Oh, okay.
So that might be something to add to your reading list.
It just sounds like just wacky.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if I would want to read the autobiography that he wrote because we know he's a carny and a showman. Yeah, he's a salesman. So how much of it can you take as gospel and how much do you have to sort of go, eh? So probably better to read books about him by other people.
Yeah, I just like documentaries. Documentaries I find sort of give me that viewpoint.
There must be documentaries about this guy because he's super famous.
Sorry, I know we're like nearly 10 minutes and I just didn't realize that this was based on like
a real guy.
Yeah, a real guy. I just assumed that this was just a movie that somebody decided to make.
No, the whole ringmaster of the circus who shouts and sells it is all based on this guy.
Huh.
Clayton, did you like the movie?
Yeah, it was okay.
Huh. Are you going to be petty because of the whole Team America thumbs up thing?
No. Like, okay. Okay, it was a musical, right?
It was.
Yeah, Grease is the best musical ever, and this ain't even close to Grease. But I enjoyed it. It was okay, yeah.
Okay, Caro, did you like it?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Highly entertaining. And, you know, Hugh Jackman was perfectly cast for it. Yeah, it was just a really fun, light, fluffy kind of a sing-along kind of a movie. So, yeah.
While trying to incorporate deeper themes, which it brushed across slightly, maybe didn't delve as much as they thought they did into them, yeah.
But I feel like if you want to watch a documentary, watch a documentary.
Yes, exactly.
You know, if I'm going to watch a movie, it's more to not watch that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, And I think that's a good place to say that we are in this podcast commenting on the movie story and separating it from whatever happened in real life. We're just talking about this movie.
Especially so when you just find out like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I put it at the start. And I was like, we do know this stuff, but
we're going
Okay, now you do. And we're going to just talk about how we liked the movie, the characters, the story, all of that stuff in the movie only. So for me, yes, I really like this movie. I watched it for the first time during, I believe, the first lockdown we had, and really, really enjoyed it. And I thought about putting it on my list for way in the future because it had been so recent. But because we don't get a choice when we have a guest, I watched it again anyway and still really like it. I find that it can really pull off some great emotional beats that make me empathize probably too much and feel a little bit sad sometimes, but then has a whole lot of uplifting beats to it as well. So, okay, Clayton, why is it just okay? Apart from that, it's not Grease.
Well, yeah, first off, it's not Grease, but yeah. Okay, so I invested an hour 44 into this, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, I made some notes as I'm sort of getting accustomed to. I'll give you some stuff that I did actually like. You know how I always go on about the intros and then they play music?
Yes.
This was awesome.
Yeah, because the musical, it's different. It's not title cards.
Yeah, but it was like the music, and then it played into the movie. Then it was the music. Then it played into the movie. Music played into the movie. Music, and then boom, you get the whole theatrical start of like the first song coming out the gate.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. It was very colorful. The whole movie was very colorful.
That's a good observation, because yes, that's right. It was.
Yep. Also, It's funny how you were explaining the real life aspect of it. Because again, I didn't know that this was based on a real life, a real story. And I wrote in my notes, because it was two lines that I picked up in the movie, was when the Hugh Jackman's doing the signs and he's looking for oddities. Is that the right word? Is that what we call them? Oddities?
For this movie, yes.
Yep. And the guy's like, hey, are you looking for some freaks? I know where they are. And then it went all the way to the end where the reporter.
Yeah.
Is all like, oh, you know, it was sad your stuff burnt down, but literally you are a person who is in the celebration of humanity. And I was like, oh, that's quite cool, because you've gone from like freaks to inclusion at the end of it. And I was like, oh, that was quite cool.
But didn't it come across to you the whole movie that Hugh Jackman was, well, apart from a scene, which I'll talk about later, but that's the whole point. Like right from the beginning, he's demonstrated that.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But I was just like, there was a cool way to summarize it in the actual movie itself. And that sort of stuck away from me. However, I will have to admit, literally from like the whole middle half of the movie, like all the middle, it was all a blur.
Where it goes to Jerry Lynn.
Oh, yeah, she was a bit boring, but it was all more, I was just like, Zendaya was awesome. And that's all I
really in it to too, watch. Really.
I know. And I was sort of like, okay, she's not in it. She's not in it. She's, oh, look, she's in it. Oh, no, she's not in it. She's not in it. Oh, look, she's in it. And so that's, yeah, just my personal preference.
So it's only, okay. So what I'm getting is that you're finding this movie just okay because it wasn't enough Zendaya in it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
I did like all the oddities. Like, whenever the oddities were there, I enjoyed them.
Yeah, and you know what I was thinking when I was watching it? And I don't know if we should stop calling them oddities, but I mean, it is what it is.
I don't know what the politically correct name is to call them. So
yeah, we'll just go with that, because that's what it is in the movie and that's what we're talking about. But one thing I found funny was I'm watching it going, your oddities, like now in modern days, are not really that odd. So these people who lived back then, if they came through like a time machine or something, that'd be like their minds would be blown. Like, you can see a lady with a beard anywhere in South Auckland, man. you can see a tattooed guy anywhere in the world.
Little people,
tall, Big, small, little people.
Dude, I see fatter guys than that guy on my 600-pound life.
The world has changed.
Correct. And back then, I understand that it was a different thing. But it's just, yeah, bizarre how a lot of what they were deeming to be freaks or oddities or whatever have sort of just normalized a bit, I feel. Like, not all of them, but a lot of them. I don't know.
Anyway. I like the part at the end when they decided that they just needed a tent. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, that's the birth of the circus, right?
Well, that's what I got out of it. I was like, oh, okay, sweet. This is like a circus. Nobody's probably done this before. And this is where, like, it was like, okay, yeah, we got this new thing, a circus, because he didn't even know what to call it until the guy in the paper called it a circus.
Yeah, well, because circus was used in a different context.
Yeah. But again, I didn't know the backstory, like, the real life and stuff like that, so it was okay.
Yeah, but I found that cool too, that he took what could be a negative connotation and turned it into the greatest show on earth, as it was actually called in real life. Cool. Okay, so what were your dislikes then? If you've got a like list, I assume you have a dislike list?
No, dislikes. No, it's not Grease. But, like...
Oh, man.
Like, I don't know. I don't want to say it bored me. Like, I enjoyed it, but it was just like, okay, sweet.
Did any parts of the movie trigger any emotion, or was it just a movie?
Emotion, the Zendaya part.
I know what you mean.
Where her and Zac Efron are going to
The theater,
and then I'm guessing that nobody likes her or her brother because they're African-American.
Correct.
Is that correct? Because I was trying to pinpoint, like, is that the only reason why? Because of their color?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, this movie skipped over the fact that the Civil War had just happened.
Yeah, so I didn't know. So I just assumed that was the case. Yeah. But that part there pulled on my heartstring because I was like, you know what? Zac Efron did the right thing. He was like, F you parents, and then he chased after the girl, and then the girl accepted him, and then you skip forward, and then there's this fire, and then he runs in like a superhero to try and get her, and she comes out the other side, and then she's all like weepy-eyed because he nearly died, and then they go to the hospital, and he's laying there, and she's all like singing to him because she's like, oh, I love you now, and so that's that part I really enjoyed.
Also, he can work the circus ropes just as well as her.
That's what I sound weird.
Yeah, he's wasted as a ringmaster. Jeepers.
I didn't know if I was supposed to assume that this, like, that part, yes, he was doing it, like, in real time, or is it, like, a metaphor or figuratively? Yeah, like, think it in my mind that this is happening. But, like, no, legit, like, he's just swinging around doing all the tricks, and it's like, okay, woo, I'm a circus man now.
It's the magical world of the live-action movie musical where everybody can break into the same song, sound pitch perfect, know all the dance moves, even though it's spontaneous.
Oh, I only found two songs catchy. It.
Only two?
Yeah, is it the greatest show?
This is the greatest show.
Yeah, and the one where all the oddities are really angry.
Oh, this
and
is it, me.
This is me.
Yeah, yeah, that song was cool. I actually like This Is Me better than the main one.
The Greatest Show.
This Is Me is the big song from the movie.
Oh, okay.
Also, is the Greatest Show though.
You think so? I think This Is Me is the one that played on the radio and stuff, though, isn't it?
Oh, true, true. Oh, but in the movie.
Yeah. So This Is Me song I enjoyed better than the Greatest Showman song, but I enjoyed both of those two songs. Yeah. The other songs, I was like, meh.
What about Rewrite the Stars? That would have been up there for me. For me, it would be This Is Me and Rewrite the Stars would be my favorite two songs.
Rewrite the Stars is the Zac Efron Zendaya one that you were just talking about, Clayton. No one can rewrite the stars. How can you say you're
mine? Everything keeps us apart. I got lost in Zendaya.
Yeah, because of the song.
Can I just point out Zendaya was not in Grease?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's a different time period. Different
in fact, probably not even born.
Yeah.
But I bet if they're recasting it, that's Clayton's pick for Sandy.
No, yeah. they did recast it, and it was Jennifer Vanessa Hudgens. Was she?
Live one.
Oh, yeah,
the live one.
Yeah, which is good because that's a callback to this, which has Zac Efron, who starred with her in High School Musical. So well done. Mm. From Now On is one of my favorites, the one where, and I'll talk about this scene later, his wife's just left him and he's in the bar, and the his mates from the circus all come in and give him a pep talk, and he jumps on a train and goes back to find her, and that song. But I think a lot of the songs I like because of what's happening in the movie, and it triggers the emotion. Because, like, you know, you could see that scene in a drama movie and it wouldn't work as well. It's the music that's triggering the reaction, right? And I think, Clayton, even though you don't know it, that subconsciously it's the music that helped that scene that you like, even though it's Zendaya all through the scene. The one where you're explaining, well, the whole love story, I guess, but
yeah.
I assume you're talking about when he runs after her, follows her back to the circus, and they have their little song and dance.
Yeah, because that was like the most powerful moment.
Because of the song.
No.
Yes,
no.
You don't know the acting. Yeah.
The most, it's powerful to me because it's how bigotry people were back then in relation to just turning around going, you know what, you're not worthwhile because of the color of your skin. And that's just messed up. Dude,
that's still now.
Yeah, and that's still messed up to me. It's like, like if that's that, were you saying that, did that have any emotion? Like, was I emotionally invested in it? That's the part that emotionally invested me. Not because of the music, but just because they did that. And then you get the whole love story, which is like good triumphs over evil. So, ha ha.
See, and it's funny too, because, and this hopefully doesn't come across as sounding wrong and not trivializing anything. And also, I don't know. It's like, as I said before, you know, a lot of these people that are in the show, I guess, you know, when they're casting for the circus, for his museum or whatever, for his show, and he's bringing all these people in, and they show him what their thing is, right? So like, I'm the fat guy, and I'm the dog boy or whatever. Zendaya and her brother only come in because they're African-American
and trapeze people.
Yeah, that's cool, but obviously they've learned to, so hang on, that doesn't even make sense, because that means there must have been circuses before. I think they're, because she says people aren't going to like it if you put us up on stage, right?
And
that's his like cha-ching moment, right? And when I said before, you know, a lot of these things, the tattooed guy, the albino to a degree, the overweight people, the, you know, whatever, are more common and, you know, I don't want to say accepted, that's the wrong word, but that they don't stand out as being oddities or stuff as much, right? Like, because it's, I don't know. I'm finding this really hard to word in a way that's not going to come across the wrong way. What I meant to say was how, and it's going to sound really bad, but that hasn't changed for the skin color argument, right? So like, and I'm not saying that a tattooed person is the same as an African-American person. What I'm saying is, how do these things, if at this point when he's auditioning, you're lining them all up as the same, right?
Yep.
The one common thing is that something's different about all of them. And it's really messed up, like you said, that something that is should have been the least odd the whole time is still the one thing mostly out of all of those that is the most still divisive or whatever. And that's also the wrong word, but.
No, I get what you mean. It's because part of society, a bunch of, well, a-holes.
You're right. It's messed up. It's, it's ridiculous. And again, we're not going to go down those paths that I've just taken us down. Sorry, but it was just a sort of crossed my mind that it's, Sad man.
Oh no, yeah, it's cool. But yeah, that like that part there and that whole love story, that's the part that I emotionally connected to for like the most. No, it's not because of the song. Because of that, out of the whole movie.
Yeah, but it's because you don't know it's because of the song, because the song's playing and it's like it adds to the emotion.
No, but it's the whole love story though.
Okay.
How did you feel when they didn't kiss at the end of that scene, Clayton?
Oh, it's all good because he's getting some later on anyway. Oh. So it's all good.
What do you mean they didn't kiss? They kiss on the ropes.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
No, they got close, but they didn't quite.
I'm sure they kissed. Maybe I remember it. Because I was watching it going, oh, is that kid from really going to kiss her? And then it was like, oh, no, stage kiss. But and I think I read somewhere in the trivia, because I was looking a little bit up to see what was factually right and wrong and stuff. And something had, like Zac Efron had said, that was his favorite kiss in any of his movies.
Well, they kiss in the hospital later
yeah,
on.
Oh, yeah, true. Maybe it's that one.
Sure I may have remembered it incorrectly. I'm sure.
No, I may have.
Because it was a big disappointment that she just walked away.
No, it just carried on the suspense because you knew it was going to come.
Maybe we're talking about different scenes.
You had hope.
Yeah, you know, that whole story, which is a fake story in relation to real life. Those two characters are not real. Sorry, Clayton. And
all good.
That story is also not real, but it's good sort of plot point for the movie.
Yeah. Efron, his character's name is Philip Carlyle. He's loosely based on Bailey.
Yes, correct.
But, yeah, I don't know whether Zendaya comes in. Loosely based on his wife, I guess.
It did say that somewhere as well, I think I read. But my point there was, oh, yeah, my scene out of that whole story that I found really probably my favorite part of it, even though it's a bad part, but it's just the way Zac Efron plays it, is when they're in the theater box in the dark and they're holding hands during during the song, and those snobby rich dudes turn around and they're like, oh, look what he's doing, you know, and they're sort of having a go. And he falters and he second guesses himself and he takes his hand away from hers. And the way she plays it and the way he plays it when she leaves, man, that really well done. Mm-hmm. Like, she just sort of gives him the look, gets up and just walks away. And he's standing there, still trying to look like he's watching the performance and ignoring what just happened, but you can see his face is like broken and it's like,
yeah,
oh man, it's really well done. So good.
And then he did the hardest thing ever, stand up to his parents.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was later. That was the second time when he was trying to make it up to her.
He learned.
Yeah.
He overcome. He stood up for his love.
Yeah.
He gave away his inheritance and everything.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And I think Hugh Jackman as well.
Oh, he was perfect for the role,
eh? Good,
Who else could you possibly have gotten?
He was the one who tried to get this movie made for like 9 years or something.
Mm.
He fought for it to get made, and the studios didn't want to make it because it was not based on any Broadway musical or anything, and he had to fight for it. And he's really good in this movie, especially when he gets Lind, the singer, the opera singer, who sings pop for some reason, onto the stage. And he hears her sing on that first show in America when he's trying to win over the elite people. And his facials when she starts singing and she starts belting out the notes, and like he's almost going to cry, but he's shocked and he's in awe and like all of these things all at once. And he's just, man, I really like that sort of thing when it comes to actors that can pull that off. It's just the subtle little facial tics. And Efron did it as well in that other scene, just his trying to look stoic but clearly breaking down. And, oh, man, it's very good. I really respect that talent. And that's when it's like,
did you like Michelle Williams' acting?
I find that she's sort of just the same in every movie. Mm. I don't dislike her, but I feel like she's just the same.
Not much range.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying she's a bad actress or anything. I just, she was fine. I mean, I enjoyed her in this movie, but her character is also a little bit off. When she's leaving him, she leaves and says, it was more the fact that you did this without asking me. And I would have said, yes, I don't mind you take risk, but we always took the risk together. But it's proven all throughout the movie that he just goes and does stuff without telling her. Like he went and got the big investment to open up his first museum without telling her, because it was a surprise to her when he took her and the kids to see it. So it's also a bit,
not consistent.
That's the word. Inconsistent is what I was trying to think of things. But yeah, I don't mind her. I liked everyone in the movie was good. What did you think about General Tom Thumb, Clayton?
As in the little person?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I grouped him in the oddities, so I enjoyed him.
He's a Kiwi. Did you know that?
No, but I like the way that you first introduce where he first gets introduced.
In the house, or
no, in the bank.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I found that funny. What are you looking at?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was good. But yeah, he's a New Zealander. Well, he's an Australian actor, but born and raised here. He went intermediate here, so he must have gone over to Australia in his teens or something.
He was friends with Jackman and the director. I think that's why he got cast.
Oh, nice. And he was also too tall for the role, even though he's short. That's why that scene where he walks across the bar looks so awkward, because he was walking on his knees.
Yeah.
That's why it looks really awkward. And all the other shots, you never really see him walking around where you can see his legs. He's always sort of cut off from the waist, so you don't really see it.
He's 127 centimetres.
Yeah, and that was too tall.
Yeah. Well, the real Tom Thumb was 103, I think. Yeah, 103 centimetres. And they actually started exhibiting him when he was only 4 years old, the real Tom Thumb.
Which is why he was small, yeah. Mm. Even worse, I think the one who became the bearded lady.
Oh, yeah.
He got even earlier. As a baby, which is weird. Did she have a beard as a baby?
Must have.
Yeah. Now, that's pretty.
So she spent most of her life as an attraction, and she died at 37, apparently. The real bearded lady.
I guess that's why she's sort of the focal, well, apart from Zendaya, side character, I guess. The beard's a thing, but it also just never looks real to me when you see a woman with a full beard. It just always looks fake.
Yeah. Well, this one was fake, obviously.
But. Well, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, man, that lady can sing, man. Mm. She belted out that song. It was really cool, and the emotion she could put into it. Oh, man, it was really cool.
Yeah, she originally didn't want to do it, did she? She thought getting another actress to do it, and she was happy to just be like backup Harmony. It took a lot of encouraging her to actually do that role. But it's good that they got her to do it in the end.
That's crazy. She should have broken out. I don't know if she's been in anything since, but she was really good in this movie, man. And the whole cast did a pretty good job. See, like, for me, I don't know, like, I think when I watch some movies, and depending, on the story and stuff, of course, I feel like I have too much empathy for characters sometimes. So like in this movie, and it starts real soon, you've got P.T. Barnum as a child, and he's going to work with his dad at his future wife's house. And, he makes her laugh, and then the dad, his future father-in-law, slaps him across the face when he says it was my fault and blah, blah, blah. Then, very quickly you find out, his dad died and now he's got nothing and he's living on the streets. And, I just made me feel so sad. like I think I just empathize too much, and I'm just like, flip, man, that's shit. And, he's burying his dad, and then he's forced to live on the streets, somehow can still receive mail. And I understand how he got mail to her, but how did she get mail to him?
He didn't have a letterbox.
He didn't have anything. And then maybe the one shoehorned bit in that whole sort of montage of his bad childhood, or his rough childhood, was the disfigured lady in the robe who hands him the apple. And I was like, oh, that's a little bit on the nose, because knowing what the story is going to be and that he's going to champion the odd or the different, it's like, oh, this is planting the seed sort of thing. You know, I mean, it's good in movie terms. You need something like that, I guess, for the audience. But yeah, so there was quite a few moments in this whole movie where I sort of was like, oh, that's real sad, and actually made me feel genuinely sad. And then the Zendaya, when Zac Efron takes his hand away and, you know, she acts strong and gets up and just walks, and, you know, like I've talked about it already heaps, and that moment. And yeah, I don't know. When I watch movies, I do sort of invest probably a bit too much, especially in these sort of movies. And I get the feels, man. But yeah, there's so many uplifting moments too, like, and it comes through the music. But
yeah, it all works out in the end.
Yeah, yeah. I think he made up with his wife a bit too easily. Yeah, I don't know. Like, was her real reason for leaving the fact that he went and spent all that money and then basically lost it all on the singer, or was it the kiss, which...
No, I don't think she cared about the kiss, because she knew that he wasn't
I hope so.
Invested with Jenny Lind. He was,
yeah.
It was all professional for him. So yeah, I didn't get the impression that she cared about the kiss at all.
Yeah, it's, oh, see, and her name is Jenny, because I called her Jerry at the beginning, which is a wrestler name, and I completely screwed that up, so yay. But yeah, I don't know, that whole story is also, well, I don't, yeah, we're probably stepping all over your trivia, but that's also rather exaggerated, the way they played it in the movie, but we'll get onto that later, I guess. But
yeah, in reality, she didn't have any feelings for PT other than, like, professional. She was just in it for raising money for her charities. But yeah, they totally made up the love story for the movie.
The jilted lover story.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That was just like, oh, I'm going to part ways with you because you rejected my kiss. And it was like, dude. And it was, yeah, that was not a real thing at all.
I think she, just the actress that played her, that I think she was the only one that didn't sing in the movie.
Yeah, Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing is she can sing.
Just she not is, like, incredibly well.
Yeah, I think she is a trained singer, and I think when they were filming she had to sing in front of the extras and the cast. So obviously her mouth and her tongue and everything are moving correctly to sure. dub it, and apparently was petrified to do it. But yeah, she was the one, I think, who said, my voice isn't right for what you need this character to sound like. And so they got one of the finalists from one of the seasons of The Voice, Lauren Allred, to come in and sing the song. So, which wasn't a very operatic song, as I said before.
No. It's
a weird choice to build her up as this big, famous European opera singer. And, I mean, obviously it has to fit the tone of the movie, and an opera song is going to completely just...
Yeah, I think that's why they did that.
Still, yeah, and I don't say that it's a wrong decision. It's just funny, like, to me, when you build it up as one thing and then it's...
It kind of detracts from it a little bit, eh? Making it a pop song.
But it was really well sung.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I do like the scene, and it's one of these scenes where you're always like, if there's someone you really dislike and you sort of have these fantasies about one-upping them one day, I know that sounds really bad, but that scene where after she performs and he's the toast of the town, and Michelle Williams or Charity's parents come in, and then he turns on them. Like, first he brings them over and introduces, and he's all nice. And then he turns around into, like, I think it's her mother says, oh, are these my, and he's like, yes, they're your grandchildren. And then he just turns and he just shames them in front of all their hoity-toity friends. Oh, that was
marvelous. You like that scene?
I loved it so much. But yeah, then I can see Michelle Williams storming off, sort of empathize with that as well. But man, that was glorious. I love that sort of thing. Anyway, that sounds really bad too. I feel like I've been talking too much. So what else do you want to talk about, Caroline, as our guest?
You've kind of covered a lot of stuff. Some of my favourite scenes were, you know, when Zendaya and, I shouldn't call her Zendaya, Anne Wheeler and Philip Carlisle first meet. You've got that trapeze. And they kind of make it slow motion.
Yes.
And then they lock eyes. And I thought that was a great scene. Apparently, they got into trouble for filming that because it, I don't know anything about cinematography, but they use a Phantom camera or something, and it can be responsible for the slow-mo, and yeah, it just costs a lot of time and money to do that, so they kind of got into trouble using that scene, but totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Yeah.
And there's another one, similar one during This Is Me, where they they're all jumping up, and that's kind of a slow motion jump up and down, which also works really well.
Oh, would there be the lady singing in the background?
Yeah, she will be singing because they're all together and they're in the circus and they
because they jump up on the side and it's somewhat freeze frames or slow motion, and she's still singing her bit in the back. It's actually quite cool.
Yeah, it's awesome scenes.
That shot with the trapeze where Zendaya with her pink hair swings in, and she's swinging in real time, and then it slows down as she's arcing up towards Zac Efron so they can be face to face. The way Zac Efron is standing and as her face comes, and they just, oh man, I was watching that going, I might call that as my favorite scene end of the podcast, because it's so nicely shot. And for a guy who hasn't directed a movie before and had a career as an animator and visual effects person, to pull off a movie that looks this nice is really an accomplishment, man. And it is really well shot, and it looks so good. And like you said, Clayton, it's very colorful.
It is. Some of the costumes, I guess, that plays into it being very colorful. They borrowed them from the actual circus, so real costumes.
That's really cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Feld Entertainment, I think, was the latest. I think the circus got bought out by a number of people over the years, and the latest family was the Feld family. So Feld Entertainment meant some costumes from them. Yeah.
That's really cool. And it's bizarre to think that this movie is set in the 1800s, the latter 1800s. And that circus only ended like 7 months before this movie came out.
Yeah.
Like, closed down for good.
I was amazed when I read that, how late it went on for.
I think it was like something like, and I'm just, the number might be wrong, but it was something like 140 something years uninterrupted that circus traveled and put on shows.
Yeah.
And it was because the year before, when Peter and all of them came in to have the animal side of the circus stopped due to cruelty and stuff.
That's a really late stopping of using the animals in the circus as well.
2016 is really late, but I think the circus couldn't recover once they lost the animal side of things, because a lot of people go to the circus to see the animals, right?
See me an elephant.
And I think they couldn't recover from losing that part of the circus, and they shut down, and the movie came out only months after that folded. That's just crazy. Right. So do you have any trivia left, Caro, that we haven't already trampled all over?
Oh, let's see. No, I wouldn't say trampled all over. Worked it in.
Here's the facts.
Couple of scenes. Oh, you mentioned the from now on bar scene at one point earlier. Mm-hmm. At one point, Hugh Jackman had to have surgery on his nose to remove skin cancer. And so he had 80 stitches, and he was told not to sing. So he followed that, but then within from now on, he just blew that, and he sung, and his nose bled all over the place. But he said it was worth it.
Was that during the filming, or was that when he was pitching the movie still?
Filming, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, this is really interesting. The scene where the fire burns down the circus, it does actually burn down the set. So it's stage.
Really?
It starts off as a stage fire, but then turns into an actual fire. And so they lost like $300,000 worth of lights.
Really?
And so some of their reactions are actually real reactions to the fire. But they kept rolling, and it gave the post-production crew a good idea of what the building would truly look like on fire. So it provided the special effects team with valuable footage. Yeah, they use a lot of miniatures and paintings in the movie. So the scenes where they're on top of the building, like when Charity and PT are dancing on top of the building, that backdrop is a painting, and you probably could tell. Yeah, and they use lots of miniatures rather than CGI all the time. So that would be quite painstaking work to...
Especially in this day and age when you don't need to do that.
Mm. No. I guess it gives a different look, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I think with a musical, you have to have a sense of heightened reality, and so people accept the, you know, obviously musicals started like as like Broadway shows and in the theatre, right? And not this one, but in general. And so I think people expect that sort of, that it doesn't have to look realistic and that it should look heightened and fantastical. And that's sort of what a musical is, maybe. But
yeah,
but that's cool.
Yeah, it definitely gives it that different feel. Mm. Oh, the music. I don't think we mentioned at the start when we were talking about the music that it was all written by Benji Pasek and Justin Paul, who also wrote songs for La La Land. And they collaborated with Ryan Lewis from Macklemore and Lewis on the main song, the This Is the Greatest Show song. So Lewis gave the overall beat and Benji and Justin wrote over the top of it. Yeah, and did they win an award for the... Yeah, they won a Grammy for the Best Soundtrack Album.
Did they win an Oscar? Well, no, I didn't actually look it up.
I'm not sure. I didn't come across that. Oh. I don't think so.
Because I wonder if they did for La La Land, because that was only the year before, I think.
They won an Academy Award for La La Land.
Yes.
Yeah,
so I heard that. Oh, not heard, I read, because I don't know them. That they wrote one of the songs, I think it was This Is Me, on the way to the final pitch meeting. And that was the song that convinced the studio to go ahead with it, like on the flight. Yeah. Because they had to write all original songs, because this is a rare musical movie that's not based on a stage musical, which is one of the reasons it was hard to get it greenlit.
I think also the success of La La Land, which was also had similar difficulties, kind of helped it get greenlit. What do you think of Hugh's singing? I quite like Hugh and Zach together because they're quite different. Hugh's quite theatrical and Zach's quite poppy. I think Zach's got a lot of range and Hugh's quite narrow, so they kind of complement each other quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Hugh Jackman's more of a traditional Broadway singer style of singing, and of course Zac Efron's High School Musical. I like Hugh Jackman's singing. I mean, I'm not like an aficionado and and all of this stuff, but I like it. I think he does a really good job, especially in the song From the Bar.
From Now On. Yeah.
It's great. He has some really powerful notes he hits. And I know, obviously, that they will re-record the version that's going to be heard in the movie, and they're not actually recording the version he's singing while he's running around, because that would sound ridiculous. but it just looks great in a musical when people can do all of this stuff while they're singing. You know, it's
incredible.
I do not like a musical. Yeah. No, I have no problem. Did you like his singing? Did you like Wolverine singing, Clayton?
I was like, it was there. It was all good.
But you like Zac Efron, right? Like you're a fan of Zac Efron.
I like his singing, but I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to listen to it, put it that way. But like for the movie, it was okay.
But you do like Zac Efron in general, I mean, right?
What, as an actor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy his acting.
I
enjoy his body more than like Baywatch. Like jacked as.
Okay. Well, we learn things every day in this podcast.
Hey.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm just saying he is jacked in Baywatch.
He is jacked in Baywatch.
Exactly.
That movie is terrible. And it's sad because it's got him and The Rock, and I like both of them. I really like Zac Efron, man. I'm so glad he broke out of being a High School Musical Disney star, as did Zendaya, broke out of being a Disney kid, and he's become like a legit actor. Like he's in a lot of different types of movies, and he's so good.
He has done a lot of range, hasn't he?
He has, like, the first one I remember him post High School Musical, which is also in my top musical movies, is Hairspray.
Yeah.
He was really good in that. And that's the movie where I thought, oh, this guy is actually going to become a thing. Then he went on and just became a straight actor, and that was really cool. Does a lot of good comedy. Dude's good, man. And we wouldn't even have this movie if it wasn't for X-Men. Let's just be very clear, because the only reason Hugh Jackman became huge and is able to do stuff like this is because he got
Wolverine money, eh?
No, Wolverine cash, like the stock he built in Hollywood from leading those movies for decades, and the fact that he wasn't even the first choice for Wolverine. So actually, we can thank Doug Ray Scott for this movie, because if he hadn't got injured or delayed on Mission Impossible 2, because he was the first choice, Hugh Jackman would never have got cast, and this movie probably wouldn't exist. So thank you, Doug Ray Scott.
It all worked out.
Yeah. Good. So did you have anything else?
Alternate casting.
Oh, you did?
The only thing I could find was that the Jenny Lind character.
Yes.
Other options were Anne Hathaway, Kerry Mulligan, and Elliot Page were options.
Oh, we're going with Elliot Page straight away. Well done.
But I think they got it right. I think any of them would have been good. I think Kerry Mulligan would have been good as the wife in place of Michelle Williams, I thought.
She's very Michelle Williams.
She is, yeah. Yeah.
And I do like her as well. I think I read somewhere that they had written the part with Anne Hathaway in mind.
Mm.
But, yeah, I don't know. I didn't mind Rebecca Ferguson in the role.
Yeah, either.
So that's fine. Plus, she's from Mission Impossible, so she gets points anyway.
Cool. I don't think anyone was really not cast well in this film.
Correct. Yeah, agreed.
I wouldn't have put any more big stars in it. I think movies can get overloaded with actors that are too well-known.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that when I was writing my intro and listing the people who starred in the movie. You know, I put the main guys in there, and then I was like, I must have forgotten someone because there's so many people in this movie.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking back, and I was like, no, those are the names, and the rest are sort of the newer wave of people. So, yeah, that's a good point. I think it's got the right amount of name recognition.
Star power,
yeah. And then a lot of very, very good supporting cast.
I actually prefer to watch people that I don't really know or haven't really seen in anything.
Well, it helps you buy into the story more, right?
Yeah. Because,
you know, like, oh, it's Tom Hanks, or oh, it's Wolverine. It's like, it's this person because I don't know them. I don't have any point of reference.
Mm.
So they are this person they're playing. I know. Maybe that's why. Me speaking on your behalf.
Yep. No, that's exactly what I was thinking. So they're thinking of making a 2.
No.
Greatest Showman 2. But they haven't released any details, or like who, like the storyline, the casting, or anything like that. So it's very early days.
What would the story be? No, that's dumb.
That's also up in the air. Yeah, it could be anything. I mean, it might not have Hugh in it. It could be more Efron's character because he kind of takes over at the end, doesn't he?
Yeah, he passes over the reins. Yeah, no, I call no on this. No. This is the worst sequel idea I've heard since Gladiator 2 and movies that don't need sequels. Some movies just are good to stand alone and let them be what they are. And
but if there's money to be made from a sequel.
That's the problem. Yeah, a sequel to this, as well as Gladiator, are complete cash-ins.
You look at Grease and Grease 2.
That didn't cash in, unfortunately.
But still, you made it, and it didn't. There was no need to make Grease 2.
No, and it's different if you're talking about a franchise like X-Men or Mission Impossible, because they are tentpole franchise things that we expect sequels to, and always set them up. But there's certain movies that are probably best served to be remembered.
As
themselves. Are. Yeah, and you don't need to dilute the memory of what was good by making something subpar just for the money. I don't know.
Keep it in the vault and then remake it in like 30 years' time.
Mate, that's what Disney, does it now, but Disney Disney used to lock away their movies and re-release them every so often so they'd get a spike in sales. So if they released The Lion King at theatres, then it would come out on home video for a certain amount of time, then it would get locked away and you wouldn't be able to buy it until they re-released it.
Oh, okay. Can't do that now because of Disney Plus, though.
Yeah, you can't do that because of Disney Plus and the internet and eBay and all of these things. It doesn't really work. But yeah, it's just let these movies be what they are and live on.
I think if you have to make a sequel, can you make it close to the release of the first one? I think that at least like a 10-year gap is a bit ridiculous.
I don't know. It worked for Terminator 2. That's one of the best sequels of all time.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a point there as well. Like as Brian phrased it on an episode of the Rambling Geek podcast, it's a long time between drinks. if it's something like Terminator, like something that is a tentpole summer blockbuster type movie, maybe it works. But when it's
John Wick,
they're never going to wait 10 years between those. But I don't know. I think, you're right. Especially for this sort of movie, you need to either do it or don't do it. And in this case, you shouldn't do it. And if you were going to do it, you've missed the window. It's closed. So I don't know. Like, I can only picture a sequel being the story of Zac Efron and Zendaya, and I don't really want to watch that story because it'll be completely fictional. And what, are they just going to run the circus? Like, I liked their story in this movie, but do you flesh that out to a 2-hour? Like, what happens next? I don't know. Like, I don't know. So that's interesting. I hadn't actually heard that, and it's I've ranted about it now.
Well, so it could be all rumors.
Could be. We can only
never know what you read on the internet.
True.
That's correct.
Good. All right. So have we all said what we want to say? Can we?
I think so.
So, Clayton, do you have a favorite? Oh, well, you've already said what your favorite scene is.
No, I've got two favorite scenes.
Okay, go.
Anything with Zendaya in it.
Yeah, well, that's what you said. So,
okay, yeah, that's number one. Yeah. And number two is the scene where the oddities want to come out, come into the main area where everybody's celebrating, and they can't, and then it kicks into the This Is Me song.
Yeah.
That whole piece is just really well done.
Oh, yeah. That's what I wanted to talk about, too. That scene. I freaking hate that movie trope where you have the guy who's been the good guy, the champion, the friend to everybody, turns on them for a petty reason, in this case, to be accepted by the elite.
But that's cool, though, because then the oddities stand up and we're like, we ain't going to take it. Boom!
Yeah, but I just, get the song. It's so contrived. Like it's like, yeah, you turn on what made you famous. You discard it because you've got a chance to become more famous. And you forget where you've come from and what you built up to become from where you came from. And then they just forgive him because his wife leaves him.
Because they're family, man. You never turn your back on family.
That's another scene that I empathize, and I was just like, or sympathize maybe is a better word, and I felt a bit sad. It's like when he, even though it's very contrived and it's been done a million times, it's like, when he excludes them and tells them to go back to the circus and don't come in here because basically he's ashamed of them or whatever, even though any other time in the movie he's not. Yeah, I don't know.
Any movies like that, like Fast and Furious,
that's what I'm saying.
Something bad happens, but you always accept family back because they're family.
No, it's not even that. It's just like taking the thing that got you to where you are and then discarding it to get more. And then he doesn't ever crawl back. I guess they come back to him. But, yeah, I guess it shows that they're the bigger people. And they...
Because he can't crawl back because he's been burned.
Yes, well, I guess. Okay, anyway, my rant that didn't make sense is over. So, cool.
You're saying it's predictable, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it just annoys me when they do stuff. Like, I could see it coming the first time I watched it. I was like, here it comes. He's going to shun them. And, but anyway, whatever. It is what it is. It was part of the story, and I still really like this movie. So anyway, Kara, what's your favorite scene?
The This Is Me scene, like what Clayton was just talking about, really great scene. Rewrite the Stars scene where they're swinging around on the ropes. And, yeah, when Anne and Philip's characters first meet, those would be my top picks. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, when they first meet, as in like when the boy gets slapped?
No, when Anne is on the trapeze and she slow-mo.
Oh, sorry, yeah, wrong character. Sorry, Philip. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Trying to use their character names. Yeah. I should just say Zendaya.
We're really bad at that in this podcast. We do it all the time. Yeah, okay. So for me, any of the musical scenes, I do really like when Jenny Lind sings Never Enough, just because the singing is really good. I mean, it's not a great scene. She's just standing there singing it and not really singing it. But I really like hearing good voices in song, and so it's really cool. But From Now On would probably be my favorite scene, even though it comes off the back of the scene I just said I hated. But him, you know, singing and sort of trying to take things back and jumping on the train and all that bollocks. But I just really like the whole scene. And yeah, as far as the shots go, it's that slow motion trapeze shot. Really, really like it. Yeah, cool. Clayton, do you have an MVP? Oh, why am I even asking? Yeah, okay. Caro, do you have an MVP?
Oh, just one.
Yeah, it can be cast or crew. It doesn't have to be an actor. Zendaya.
Is it too obvious to go with Hugh? I mean, the movie wouldn't be the movie without Hugh's character.
Yep. Behind the scenes and in front of the camera, so it's a good call.
I'd
say the director. Just the fact that that's his first movie, and the songwriters, because I really like the songs in this. As we said, the actors were all good. Hugh Jackman was great. All of them were good. But the directing of this movie, the cinematography, so it's a different person, obviously. Everything behind the scenes, like costume design, lighting, everything. So good. So I'll give it up for the crew in general for this movie. Cool. Now is the point where we would normally announce what the next movie is, but it's Brian's pick and he's not here. So we don't know what the next movie is going out of this podcast. And this has actually gone on way longer than I expected, which is cool, but it's been a good chat. We'll tack on Brian's probably quite brief summary now, and he'll say his pick then.
Sweet. Can I give my thumbs?
Oh, yeah, we didn't do thumbs. Sorry. So, yeah, okay, go, Clayton. How many thumbs up out of two possible thumbs?
And I can go fractional, can't I?
Well, we did. So, yeah. Yes.
I'll give it one.
So you didn't even go fractional while you
were... Nah, I just wanted to hype it up, but no, one thumb.
Okay. Caro?
Two thumbs up. For sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And for me, I would give it 1.5 thumbs because I very much enjoy it, but there's a few little things that annoy me. But overall, I do really like it. So 1.5, and then we'll get Brian's thumbs later and work out the score. But it sounds like it's going to be pretty decent. Cool. So we will be back in 2 weeks with our next episode, which will be, don't know. We'll find out in a few minutes when I tack on Brian's convo. So stay tuned.
Time traveling, people, time travel.
Yeah, the miracle of editing, because you'll know at this point.
I won't.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for a text.
So until then, we will see you in 2 weeks, and we are out.
Bye.
All right, and now we're back with Brian, who's going to join us. So first of all, thanks again to Caroline for jumping on and being our first lady guest and giving her pick and perspective of the movie. And hopefully we'll have her back soon. But now, power's fixed, and welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Didn't really want to have you guys having to join me at 1 o'clock in the morning when the power came back on. So
yeah, crazy, man.
It is what it is.
So... did you watch the movie?
I did watch the movie.
All right.
It was the discussion around it. So I'm not just sort of repeating something that's already been said. I guess to give you my 10-cent review of it, I liked it.
Good.
If we're going to do a thumb count, I guess probably one thumb.
Okay.
I think. And the reason that it's not two, or that it's not more than one, if you like, I don't think it ever would have been a two-thumb movie for me, but just the thing around it was that as I was watching it, I just kept thinking, this is really slick. It's a really slick and kind of a polished movie, and everything was very bright colored and very clean, all very Disney-fied, obviously. And even though it was kind of an enjoyable watch, I just thought it was, I kept thinking also all the way through, it was sort of a neat movie or a tidy movie, particularly the towards the end where, you know, everything starts off really rosy and you go, well, there's conflict coming somewhere. Things are going to kind of crumble on him at some point. And then they do. And there's the bit with the, very old school version of a paparazzi shot, I suppose. His wife finds out and all that kind of thing. And then there's where the conflict comes from. And then it just resolves really quickly. And at the end, he goes back and he finds her and she forgives him and everything is fine again. Not that there's really much to forgive, you know, today's standards, I guess, but it all just wraps up really neatly.
Yeah.
And so if I'm going to think back on it at any point and remember the whole thing, I'm probably going to be thinking songs were good. That's kind of the stuff that's more likely to stick in my head, I think. It was just kind of a movie that told its story, wrapped it up nicely and moved on.
We brought up the fact, or I did, about the fact that he brings that conflict on himself, that undoes him for a little while, with the whole scene where the circus troupe try to come in to the fancy soiree after the singer has performed, and he turns them around, and how that's a very contrived plot device in a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. And we also had touched on the colourfulness and, as you said, slickness of the movie, but we actually praised that. We liked that, but I agree that it wrapped up. We did discuss, and Caroline's point of view was that the kiss had nothing to do with her leaving, which is correct to the dialogue in the scene.
Yeah, that is true. I had to think a couple of times about that when I was watching it and go, oh, why is she leaving? Oh, it's the fact about the money and all that.
And something I didn't touch on and I thought about afterwards was his wife and kids leave and he goes straight to a bar a long, long way away because it's obviously a train ride away and then starts singing and dancing about half an hour later. Like,
yes,
you know, he gets swept up in it all. But still, if this has just happened and this is the love of your life who you wrote to somehow when you were on the streets and have been in love with since you were, I don't know, 10 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you're probably not just going to be half an hour later up and feeling like having a good old sing and dance. But
they danced. I got my moxie back.
And that was, but then that did lead into one of my favorite songs. Or scenes as well. So one thumb up. So you're equal to Clayton on this one.
Okay. All right. I did wonder.
The way it went was one thumb from Clayton, one and a half from me, and two from Caroline.
Okay.
And now one from you.
Good luck with the maths there.
It's over 50%, so that's good.
Hey, that'll do.
Yeah.
Not our best, not our worst, I think. Well, definitely not our worst. I know that. I was there for that one.
Yeah, cool. So, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about this movie?
No, that was pretty much all I had. That was the stuff that stuck in my head. It's good performances. I like the cast. Jackman was Hugh Jackman. I even liked Zac Efron in this movie, and I'm not a fan by any means, but I thought he did pretty well. And I couldn't think of a favorite scene. I thought back on it, but nothing really that stood out to me as one real standout.
Okay, what about MVP? Anything?
No, not really. This can sound like a really feeble answer, but again, nobody stood out to me. It was just, you know, movie came in, rolled along, did what it was going to do, and I went, well, that was a good watch. It was me, really.
Okay. Well, for all of you who waited for the hour and 4 minutes to get Brian's hot take, there it is.
Yeah.
Well done.
And if you really waited all that time for me, please feel free to reevaluate your priorities.
But obviously this take would have been extended out had you been in the conversation with everybody, I guess. So it just seems short. But valued. So thanks for coming back.
I'd bring every time if we just do like a supercut of me. That's all there was.
Just 6 minute segments every single time. Okay, but we needed you back on for another reason anyway, because your pick is the next one.
It is.
Have you got a movie in mind for us to watch in 2 weeks?
I do. I have my pick. I changed my mind a couple of times during the 2 weeks I had to think about it, but I've settled on one, and I'm going to be intrigued to see how this one goes. And even though it's just you and I, this particular call, still going to try and build it up, because I know you like that. Mm. It's, again, another recent movie. It's one from 2017, nominated for 13 Academy Awards and won 4 of them, including Best Picture and Best Director. It stars Sally Hawkins, Michael Shannon, Octavia Spencer, Doug Jones, pile of other people, directed by Guillermo del Toro of Hellboy, Pan's Labyrinth, and all of that. And this time, I'm going to make the club watch The Shape of Water.
The sexy fish movie.
The sexy fish movie. Good summary.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I've only watched the first half hour of that, I think.
So you have more to come.
I have a lot more to come, probably.
You've watched it, and we'll see how we go.
All right, cool. So we'll be back in 2 weeks to watch The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro. Join definitely Brian, Clayton, and myself, and probably Jared. Go and watch the movie. Come back, listen to what we have to say. If you have comments about that movie or The Greatest Showman, feel free to drop us an email at heritagefilmpod@gmail.com or jump over onto Instagram and Facebook at Heritage Film Pod. And let us know there. We will see you in 2 weeks. Until then, we are out.
What you've heard on this week's episode? Well, the answer is simple. It would mean the world to us if you could head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and feedback. Spreading the word really is the best way to grow our podcast and achieve even greater things. Thank you.
That's the end. Thanks for listening.